Good morning. It's time for the KVNF news for Friday, July 26th, 2013. I'm Marty Derlin. The Denver Post reports that a Pueblo Democrat will attempt to petition her way into the recall election of Senator Angela Giron. According to the Post, Sonia Negrete Wynn has until Monday to gather 1,000 signatures from Democrats to be placed on the ballot. Negrete Wynn claims the move is to protect against the possibility of a Republican taking office should Giron lose the recall election. Meanwhile, retired Deputy Police Chief George Rivera is collecting signatures to be on the Republican ticket. The recall elections for both Giron and Senate President John Morse are set for September 10th, when voters in their respective counties will be asked whether to repeal them from office and who should succeed the senators if the recall passes. In early July, Colorado designated 14 counties as primary natural disaster areas due to agricultural losses caused by the recent and ongoing drought. Several of those counties are in the San Luis Valley in South Central Colorado. Farmers there are now eligible for low-interest emergency loans, but as KGNU's Maeve Conran reports, that may not be enough for this agricultural hub, which is facing a long-term water crisis that could permanently affect the entire valley.
These are Narcota russet potatoes.
Thousands of potatoes go by on a conveyor belt under the watchful eyes of farmer Carla Shriver and a local ag agent.
Every load is inspected by the state of Colorado so that we know the quality of our potatoes going out.
These potatoes are from last year's crop and they are good. Shriver held them back from market until this spring in the hopes of getting a better price. Now they're headed to North Carolina. Shriver has farmed in the San Luis Valley for nearly 30 years. Her roughly 800-acre farm stretches across Rio Grande and Alamosa counties, and she relies on both surface and well water to irrigate her crops.
Then when our surface runs out, we will then go to well water. Then that will finish our crop out.
Shriver's surface water ran out at the end of May, and now she relies on water pumped from the shallow unconfined aquifer, one of the valley's two major underground reservoirs. Shriver and other local farmers are now acutely aware that even that water is running out.
And that aquifer is in serious decline.
That's Steve Vandever, the general manager of the Rio Grande Water Conservation District. He's one of the people charged with solving the depleting groundwater problem, and that's not easy. For decades, the natural recharge of the aquifer has not kept pace with pumping. The crisis was first identified 40 years ago, resulting in moratoriums on new well permits. Vandever says 11 years ago, the situation got worse.
We had 3 years of very severe drought. And it really brought to light a number of things that we hadn't really known before. And since that time, the aquifer's been in a very serious decline. And it's just because we've been effectively in a drought since 2002.
Now the water district has to come up with a management plan to try and stabilize the situation.
We're in the process of creating groundwater sub-districts that are specific geographic or geologic or hydrologic areas.
The first sub-district came online last year. Well owners there must now pay a fee to pump water. That money goes toward achieving its main goal, keeping their portion of the aquifer at a sustainable level.
We haven't accomplished that yet, but we are buying water rights to formally recharge into the aquifer to help with that effort. And then we've done a number of other tools trying to reduce the amount of pumping. One is a fallowing program where we've used some of that money to pay farmers to not pump.
Through the Conservation Resource Enhancement Program, the U.S. Department of Agriculture has approved $120 million to help pay farmers in that first sub-district to stop farming land. The ultimate goal is to have 80,000 acres of land in the valley left fallow. That's a 20% reduction in farming, which they hope translates to a 20% reduction in water use. But recent rises in commodity prices have made the choice to fallow land less attractive. Factor in evolving irrigation methods, the way forward to restoring the aquifers is less clear, says Michael Wisdom, Executive Director of the San Luis Valley Development Resources Group.
What if I was more of a farm boy and just figured out how to make my water 125% more efficient? If I figured out different ways to apply less water to a crop and still get the same yield, why would I fallow land?
If local water authorities cannot stabilize the aquifer, state officials will come in with their own mandates and could shut off wells completely. That happened almost a decade ago in northeastern Colorado when the state engineer shut down 440 groundwater wells irrigating 200 farms in the South Platte Basin. To help local residents tackle the problem themselves, farmer Carla Shriver, also a Rio Grande County Commissioner, sees the sub-district plan as a lesser of many evils that come with drought.
Well, of course, you know, we're not happy with it, but it's reality too. You know, we are overextended on what is grown, and we are actually mining the aquifers. Something's got to change or we're all going to be out of business.
The Rio Grande Water Conservation District has survived four legal challenges to its plans for stabilizing the aquifers. But now there's a resigned acceptance that without better solutions, some farms will not make it through the current water crisis. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio and Connecting the Drops, I'm Maeve Conran.
Connecting the Drops is a year-long collaboration between Rocky Mountain Community Radio stations and the Colorado Foundation for Water Education. Find out more at cfwe.org. A Grand Junction company has been chosen to participate in the Eco Partnerships Program between the U.S. and China this year. According to the Grand Junction Daily Sentinel, the company Raven Ridge Resources has worked with China for more than two decades. Together with the Guizhou International Cooperation Center for Environmental Protection, the company will work towards cleaning up Chinese coal mines and making them safer. The partnership also aims to develop a Chinese market for using coal mine methane gases. The Department of Energy and the Environmental Protection Agency are among the U.S. entities involved with the project, while Raven Ridge will provide consulting services for the coal mines, including advice on how to most effectively harness vented methane gases. The Sentinel reports some of the company's work in China has been funded by the U.S. government. With severe drought continuing to affect agriculture on the Western Slope, KVNF's Travis Bubenik explores how two tech-savvy local sheep ranchers found a way to cut costs and manage their animals more efficiently.
Yeah, she's our most aggressive dog.
Uh-huh. Uji McGuire introduces me to one of her guard dogs at Desert Weir Farms, just outside of Paonia on Garvin Mesa.
We run Black Welsh Mountain sheep. These are adult rams, ram yearlings.
Her and her husband Ken manage a unique breed of sheep, a threatened breed, in fact, one that's also part of a USDA research project looking at the animals' reproductive systems. Since they're being studied, these sheep have to be closely tracked, and the McGuires need all the data on the animals they can get. Sheep are usually tracked by hand, counting each ear tag one at a time. And if you misread a tag, sometimes you have to just start over. It costs time and labor, both of which the McGuire's two-person operation can't afford to spare. So with a little Silicon Valley-style creativity, they figured out their own way to electronically track their flock without having to buy thousands of dollars worth of equipment.
And now we'll hear about open-source EID hardware and software from Ken and Avi McGuire.
At the 86th Annual Conference of the Colorado Wool Growers Association in Montrose, Uji unveiled the open-source electronic ID system her and Ken have been working on for months. The Lamb Tracker software, as they call it, works with any smartphone or handheld device that has Bluetooth and an Android operating system, so no iPhones. To use the software and actually do the tracking, Ken built a digital EID reader for under $100 out of PVC pipe, some parts from Australia, and a $10 Bluetooth device. Lamb Tracker is completely free and open for anyone to use and modify.
The biggest question that people ask is, well, how are you going to make any money? Well, do you have to make money?
At the local brewery, the McGuire's de facto lamb tracker office, Ken explains why they're keeping this program free and public.
I'm an open source fanatic developer and have been for a very long time. With closed source software, you're at the mercy of the people that build it, that make it.
The project is self-serving, and Ken's okay with that. After all, they wouldn't have built it if they didn't need it. And he's also aware it's not something every rancher needs.
Probably nobody outside of the sheep industry, and maybe some of the elk breeders, are interested in what we're doing. But the sheep industry has done a lot for us, and we feel that that's a good thing to help us give back to the sheep industry.
So you don't have to load one at a time?
You don't have to load one at a time.
Uji and rancher John Bartman chat about sheep tagging at the convention. Bartman hangs around the McGuire's demo table for a while, asking questions, talking about his experience with some of the EID equipment that's already on the market.
What they have opened up or exposed now is that, you know, a lot of these corporate companies, large companies, they got these as trade secrets, and they want to patent it and sell it, which, that's understandable.
Bartman runs 2,000 sheep in Wyoming and northern Colorado, and while he appreciates the McGuire's DIY spirit, he says it's still too early for low-cost EID systems like Lamb Tracker to really catch on.
You don't have the equipment like sorting chutes and readers that read it fast enough to make it applicable on a commercial basis. Some of my ewes got EID tags in them, but if you're going to load a semi-truck, you got to get 300 head of sheep on that truck in less than 30 minutes. The technology isn't there to read that 300 ewes in less than 30 minutes and do it accurately.
I think what she's doing is great. It's, you know, provide good information. When you start running the thousands of sheep, it's just cost prohibitive to do it. Yeah, I mean, I think the data would be great.
Steve Raftopoulos, also a larger-scale rancher, says it's still just too expensive to track every sheep with an electronic tag. EID readers on the market right now run anywhere from $400 to $1,200 a piece. They're sturdy for sure, often shaped like a baseball bat. But add to the readers a $65 battery pack, $3 a piece ear tags, and the costs start to outweigh the benefits.
That wand reader, we call it the cricket bat.
Cricket bat.
That's $1,100. Just
and
the readers.
And
does
same
the same thing.
This.
Okay, you know, you can do more with it. You can whack a ram on the head with it or something.
Ken admits you'd have to be a hobbyist to build a homemade ID reader like his own. But anyone with an Android smartphone, even a half-plastic kid's tablet computer, can download and use the Lamb Tracker software to manage data on their animals. It's at least a start to cutting costs and working around industry standards. And while it may not work for large flocks, Connie Theos says it could help ranchers raising breeding rams.
I just pointed to the Snyders. They raise bucks, rams. But they also have a range sheep operation. But I think if you were going to be raising rams for sale to other people, there's a lot of information that you need to retain.
Terry Lammers with Snyder Ranches in Norwood said that's about right.
I think that technology could be very useful because we sell breeding rams and we tag them, and those numbers are impossible to read.
The McGuire's hope to also make the whole process cheaper by getting ear tags imported from overseas and approved by the USDA. Electronic tagging is largely mandatory in the UK, so the tags are much cheaper. But Ken insists he's opposed to that kind of regulation in the U.S.
We think that the freedom to do what we want is, and what we need to do, outweighs what the USDA thinks that we should do.
For Ken and Uji, the Lamb Tracker project is more about empowering individual ranchers than trying to steer the course of the industry. It's mainly an experiment, but as Uji explains, there may also be a dream involved.
This is lamb number one. This is Mr. One, and he was the demo sheep to get full EID at birth, and so he's our electric sheep. So androids might dream of electric sheep.
For KVNF News, I'm Travis Bubinick.
According to an online statement by Rain Klepper of the North Fork Mosquito Abatement District, two eyewitnesses on July 15th reported an illegal spraying of insecticide from a truck in Hotchkiss. The incidents reportedly took place near Cedar and Cole Roads, as well as Willow Heights Park. The district is currently investigating the incident and asks anyone with information to call 527-6681. Klepper's statement noted that Cedar Road is posted as a pesticide-sensitive area and that spraying insecticide in such a manner is, quote, blatantly illegal. And that concludes the KVNF News for today. I'm Marty Derlin. Thanks for listening.